Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we jump into our conversation about Marshal Eddie Conway trying to see if this is a moment where he may be a free man once again, and for those who've never heard of him, we'll talk about who he is and what that means. We're about to have a conversation first with John Perez. John Perez is an organizer of Occupy the Hood Philadelphia, and John, welcome. Good to have you with us. Hello? I'm not hearing any of my headphones from our guest. Okay. Folks, got to let me know what's going on because I can't hear what's going on in my headphones, and I can't see who you have on the screen, so let me know what's happening here. All right, and we can jump into the conversation as soon as we do. All right, anyway, so let's jump into our conversation about Eddie then. Since All right. Okay. Folks, welcome. Good to have you on the show. I'm sorry for the confusion. We didn't get the guy from Philadelphia, but we'll do that later in the week if that doesn't come up now. We're joined here in studio by Dominique Stevenson, who's director of the American Friends Service Committee, Maryland Peace with Justice Program, co-author of Martial Law, The Life and Times of a Baltimore Black Panther, who's been on the show many times, the Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore. Good to have you back in the studio once again. Charles Duggar's with us, a teacher in the Baltimore City Public School System for over 40 years, and this time he's not here to talk about schools, but to talk about something very different. Good to have you in the studios. Omari Fatiu is with us. He's a graduate of the Friend of a Friend program who now works in the program and knew Eddie Conway when he was doing time in the same prison system. Doc Cheatham is with us, president of the National Action Network Baltimore chapter, and welcome to you all. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And sorry for the confusion. 410-319-8888 is the number. You can join us whenever you are ready. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let's take a step backwards in history to talk about what this case is about and what happened. And Dominique, this has been the heart and soul of a lot of your work over the years. So why don't you begin? Anybody can just chime in as they wish to fill in the blanks about what is the story, because there are many people who don't know the story of Eddie Conway.
Okay.
Let me get that mic a little closer to you. Good.
Yes. Fine. So Eddie Conway was a member of the Baltimore chapter of the Black Panther Party. Later on, some years later, and this has to be noted, it was found out that that particular chapter was actually started by a man named Warren Hart, who it turns out was an agent of the National Security Agency. Mm-hmm. So from the very onset, the government played a role in really trying to bring that chapter down, as it played a role in bringing down many of the chapters of the Black Panther Party and eventually, creating situations where the party just imploded. So Eddie was involved in the chapter here, was a lieutenant in the chapter, and he was basically involved in the day-to-day activities, the breakfast program. Those are the kind of things I think that get left out when people think about the Black Panther Party, the fact that they did breakfast programs for children. I believe it's People's Health, which is still in existence, was a program of the Black Panther Party.
On the Greenmont Avenue, the People's Health Clinic, and it still exists.
Yes.
Right.
So he was pretty much engaged in really trying to create a different type of community. He had a young son at the time, and he really wanted his son to grow up in a different world. At some point during his involvement in the Black Panther Party, there was a shooting of two police officers in West Baltimore. And after those shootings, two members of the Black Panther Party were arrested in some proximity to where the shootings happened. That was Jack Johnson and, I believe, Jackie Powell. And later on down the line, Eddie was rounded up with most of the other members of the party, and he was told originally that he was being arrested on the suspicion of the disappearance of an informant and later on charged in the shooting of the police officers.
Charles, you were around that time. I remember well.
I just wanted to say also that the Panther Party was doing very serious political education classes, also trying to make people more aware. I think the shooting took place at Myrtle Avenue and Dolphin Street. And at one time, because I know I was just coming back from Howard University after having graduated from there, that it had been said, I think, that the police might even have been involved with selling drugs in the community, because I think that's around the time of Big Lucille. I don't know if you remember that wild story about a black woman that was selling drugs for the police right at Pennsylvania and Lafayette Avenues. And I think it's just based on the testimony of a informant that was Eddie's cellmate, that supposedly out of some notion of fancy, Eddie decided he's going to tell this gentleman that he's the person that did it. I think that's all that
pretty
this,
much.
Yeah, pretty much the case revolves around. And so we who know how the as you just said earlier, Dominique, in terms of, and I think Anthony Browder's book was very revealing as well, how much the police have been involved with so much, be it the counterintelligence program or the like, to set us up, you know, to be in a situation where they could say that this man did this. And from that point on, he's been in prison. Was it 43 years now?
It's 41.
Oh, 41.
And the reality is there was never any physical evidence linking him at all. Charles Reynolds was the informant who was placed in his cell, and Eddie protested it. He knew that they were placing this man in his cell, basically, to go into court and say that he'd confess to him. So, it, you know, and that, based on that testimony of someone who did not know him, was not even in Baltimore at the time that the shootings took place, he was convicted. This man, Charles Reynolds, was in one of the prisons in Jessup, and he was moved into the Baltimore City Jail prior to being moved to Michigan, which is highly unusual that a prisoner is going to come from a medium or maximum security prison and be placed in a local jail to be moved into a medium or maximum prison in another state.
Doc?
I would say the thing that, that troubles many of us is not only how Eddie has been in jail for so long with so little.
How many years has it been?
41 years.
41 years.
How it mirrors so much the Troy Davis case. You know, you don't have any forensic. You don't have witnesses. You have, you know, testimony on one individual, and that individual, at the very least, is suspect. You know, for him to have been in jail that long, you know, it's a tragedy, you know. But, you know, it's ironic that we're about to have a movie shown about J. Edgar Hoover, who did so many devious and I can
wicked
stuff, illegal things. And, you know, a movie's going to be, you know, depicting him, because without a doubt we know that the Panther parties around the country, especially the one here, were targeted. And they were targeted as a result of COINTELPRO. And there were individuals that continue today, and Eddie's one of those that suffer as a result of the awful things done by J. Edgar Hoover. And I tell folks it's ironic that these things are kind of overlapping because we just celebrated the monument of King. And I always tell folks, having been a president in other Southern Christian Leadership Conference, many of us see the picture of Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Bobby Kennedy, and John, and Edward. We see all three of them in the picture. And the picture is dated August 28, 1963. And we all know that the Kennedy brothers weren't at the March on Washington. Why were they taking the picture? But if you really trace the history of J. Edgar, that was the meeting where J. Edgar had informed Robert, "Robert, it is your responsibility to convince your brother, the president, that we now wiretap everything and everybody around King." This is the kind of work that J. Edgar Hoover did, and we have, unfortunately, someone in jail as a result of the work of J. Edgar Hoover, from my vantage point.
Omari Fatiu, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us. And I want to hear your perspective as someone who spent time in prison, knew Eddie in prison, and the work and the kind of human being he was in the program you were in, Friend of a Friend. Talk a bit about that Eddie Conway we never hear about or see.
Well, I find the first thing I found when I met him in prison and talked to him was that he's very humble. From his old experience and what he's gone through over the years, he still have a great perspective and love for his people, for people in general. And, you know, he actually sacrificed everything that he, you know, loved to actually enhance the quality of life in prison and outside of prison. He's constantly working. And the person we sticks by so much is his selflessness. His selflessness is very humbling. I also love the work that he's done to create the different numerous programs over the year, but the one in particular, Friend of a Friend, that I'm participating in right now, also while I'm in society. He's paved the way for the youth and family members to actually get involved in restructuring the community, revitalizing the humanistic aspect of society. And I find it overwhelming, amazing that he can do that from inside. And actually, you know, we're embarking on his parole date, and he rarely talks about that. He rarely talks about it. So, you know, I find that so amazing for the actual things that he went through in his lifetime so far.
Heber Brown, Reverend Heber Brown, is here also with us here in the studio. Before you open the phones, 410-319-8888. Ben in Washington and Leo in Bolton Hill. We're going to come to your calls in just a minute. And Heber, I mean, because your generation, it's a generation at least removed from when this happened, but you're in the middle of this to free Eddie Conway from prison.
Yeah, and I'm thankful because I was I would not have been blessed to meet. At least to speak with Mr. Conway, if it had not been for Sister Dominique right here. And so I'm so thankful for her. It was a couple of years ago when she first really began to educate me, and then one of the meetings connected me with him by way of telephone. And it's just a blessing then, and even speaking with him today was a blessing that I was able to share with him for a few moments. And one of the things, as Brother Omari was speaking about, it was so true today. You know, I'm focused on trying to educate people about the parole hearing and to try to help support the brother. And I was telling Mr. Conway that today, Brother Conway that today, and he was more interested in talking to me about, you know, what I could share with my church, because this Sunday we're having a special day focused on formerly incarcerated people and their families. It's a day of empowerment. We, you know, in churches we have like Nurses Day, Choir Day, Children's Day. Well, this Sunday might as well be Marshall Eddie Conway Day at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. It'd just be a day for us to really hear about the struggles that people go through in the prison industrial complex and what the churches can do. And churches can do a lot in partnership with community groups. But for me, my life has been touched by Mr. Conway's spirit. His fire is still there. That fire, still behind bars, but that fire to really reach out to community is really inspiring. And, you know, if he can do so much in 41 years behind bars, what excuse do I have?
That's right.
I have no excuse. And so that's why, thankfully, being embraced into all of this by those around me and those not here currently, but I have responsibility and I want to take it seriously.
Let me open the phones, then we'll come back to the heart of Eddie's story. The parole hearing may be taking place tomorrow, and you can have an influence on that by writing letters, signing petitions, making a phone call to the parole board, and letting your voice be heard. And we'll talk a bit about why he should be freed. There are many people out there who think Eddie Conway should not be freed because he's been accused and found guilty of killing a police officer. I think most people in this room would probably sit and agree that if someone killed a police officer, they shouldn't be walking the street or anybody else. But the issue is here is that there's no proof that it ever did it. This is part of a complete campaign. Any of you who were alive during the late 60s and early 70s and active and involved, remember that there was a move by the federal government to go after everyone in the Black Panthers, to either outright murder people, as it did Fred Hampton and others in Chicago, to set people up on charges and put them in prison, to infiltrate groups. People were killed who were part of the American Indian Movement, who were part of the Black Panther Party, who were part of every movement you can think of in America, and done, as my friend Doc Cheatham just said, at the behest of J. Edgar Hoover, his FBI, who played that role. I threw out there to folks here to consider as well, this may be a time, since that was a war zone. America was in a war in Vietnam, and America was in a war then here in America. In the streets of America were at war. And so maybe it's time for a truth and reconciliation commission for our own country. So people like Eddie Conway and Leonard Peltier and others can sit with the men who persecuted them and shot them and put them in prison to come to a place of peace and setting this country right. Your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Ben in Washington, D.C., you're on the air.
Hey, Lo, how you doing?
Well, welcome.
On the show today.
Go ahead, but welcome, Ben.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, good. How you doing? Good to be on the show.
Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was Well, my name is Ben Woods. I went to Students Against Mass Incarceration at Howard University. I was asked, given the number, to be on the show, actually, as a part of the panel.
Okay, we have a huge panel, but I think to hear your thoughts on Eddie's incarceration would be helpful, so please go ahead.
Okay, well, how you doing, Dominique and Brother Amari, Brother Brown, Reverend Brown?
Peace, Brother Ben.
Good. Well, as someone who's worked with a friend of a friend program for a couple months now, I mean, this case is really important, I think, to really get the word out about this brother, because a lot of people, especially someone in college age, a lot of the people of this generation don't understand or even know that there are people, that there was a counterintelligence program, that there is a brother, there are brothers and sisters that are locked inside. And to really get the word out about that, I think, is one of the things we're trying to do, and I think it's important to do. And really to understand, like Brother Mario was saying, that there's so many people that are still locked inside, and that there's a lot of things that he's been doing. I mean, a lot of these brothers and sisters, like, that have been locked up, as soon as they go inside, they're still doing the work. They don't stop doing the work. They don't get down. They keep going, you know. And like Mr. Conway, I was just inside on Jessup the other day, and like Brother Mario said, he was just talking about various things, Occupy Wall, you know, the Occupy movement, the various, you know, other things going on in the world. He wasn't even on his mind. You know, we had to bring it up to him. What do you think? You know, so it's something to see someone so selfless and really could be a major and important person in the community and do amazing work outside if he was out and really make a true contribution to the black community and the larger community.
Let me return to the phones here and get some folks in to join us with their thoughts at 410-319-8888. Leo in Bolton Hill, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Mark Steiner.
Welcome, Leo.
Reverend Brown and everybody, how you doing?
Coming along.
I must tell you that, of course, I'm in prayer and supportive of the initiatives and efforts for the parole of Eddie Conway. He served more than 40 years in prison. The evidence is clearly, I understand some folks recanted testimony and that there's no real evidence to hold him. But what offends me and what outrages me is the position of the governor of the state of Maryland, Martin O'Malley. I don't understand why the governor, given his position on the death penalty, would not go ahead and pardon this brother. I don't understand it. The governor says he's against the death penalty, but he will not move or take action to repeal the death penalty. So you can't have it both ways. You know, that kind of hypocrisy is not appreciated, and it's hypocritical. And I know he's a politician, but you got to stop playing politics with this kind of issue. You got to stand up for what's right. If the death penalty is wrong, this man's been in jail long enough, go ahead and pardon him. Yes, I pray that the parole board will act, but I want these captains of the political spectrum who are supported by the Greater Baltimore Committee and the big money in this state, we want them to stand up and be men. And the governor hasn't been a man on this issue. He's a coward, and he's a hypocrite. And that's all I have to say.
All right, Leah, thank you so much.
Praise God.
Go ahead, Charlie Duggar.
Yes, what we need, as the brother calling in from Howard University, is saying we really have to study, because at the time, or around the time of Eddie, of course, we had Geronimo Pratt on the West Coast, and sadly Geronimo Pratt was free but recently died.
That's
so here's a man spent all this time unjustly in prison, and he comes out and dies. And there was another brother, I'm trying to remember his name, that Johnny Cochran helped get out.
That was Geronimo.
Oh, that was Geronimo. I thought it was still another beyond it, wasn't it? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have Mumia Jamal up in Philly right now with a similar kind of case, you know, and that at some point we have to say, how is it that it is this way when those people among us that are really trying to awaken us and try to work with us and help us, we are seen as enemies. You know, as we make people aware of the counterintelligence program, I mean, it was so serious that what the government was going to give the Weathermen, remember that radical group, the Weathermen, they were going to give them the bombs to blow up the Statue of Liberty. This was the government, or some of these people even now that they're calling so-called terrorists. This young fellow, I think, was going to blow up a military training center or something. But again, it is the government that is encouraging these people to do it. And then when they say, okay, I'll do it, then they come down on them. So what is really going on with so much, you know, do we really understand the drama of this kind of society where if nothing else, a black man can always be blamed for anything. You know, a number of students read To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee in school, you know, and again, blame the crime on the Negro. When we look at Blues for Mr. Charlie, you know, James Baldwin's play that really turned a lot of heads and people were thinking about Mr. Charlie and Miss Anne, but just the fact, again, how a Negro can be blamed, an African-American, and usually that's all it has to be said. And too often, even some of us as black people, we will immediately, I thought he did it, but many of us to this day, when something horrible happens, we often say, I hope a Negro didn't do it, an African-American, because so much is not a part of us. And to cowardly come up and shoot a policeman, that's not a part of us. You understand? And I'm saying that we need to begin, because here we are in a city where the police shot into a crowd of people back in January, back on Franklin Street, and we still don't know what that's about. And they killed one of their own policemen. You know, who's going to tell them what that really was about, since the people there were, it didn't seem to matter that much. A brother named Leon Manker I met years ago, he was with the Left Bank Jazz Society, and he was taking cultural programs into the Maryland Penitentiary about 1970. And that was the first time I had met Brother Eddie, when we would take poets and drummers into the prisons. And some of us have been doing it for about 40 years now. And to meet a brother then, I didn't know that much about his story then, as other ones of us are saying, to have such a strong, wonderful spirit. And then from there, he would call me and we would talk about trying to bring more programs into more prisons, and we were able to do that. And then I was teaching in Mervo High School at the time, and they were doing a program, not Scared Straight, because we didn't want to do that, but I think it was the 7-step program. Yeah. And it was a great program. I took over a period of a few years, a number of young people went through, and through Eddie's leadership and direction, I saw while we were in one section of the meeting room, then there was a newspaper going on another section. Then Eddie had a writer's club. So here's a brother that was just so industrious, so creative, doing so many things. I think he work on his master's degree also? Yes. While he was, I mean, so he didn't do time. He used time, you know, and that's the kind of thing that with so many of us, and if the volunteer activity coordinators weren't doing their job, he was making certain they were doing their job so that outside people could come into the institution. So I think that so much of where we are now is that, you know, we have been, you know, all the crack that flooded our communities and all the guns and the too much rap and the, like, too much surface rather than substance has not aroused many of us as it should. So I hope that, you know, as people that are listening today and people like to use the computer, they go online and they begin to see just what this brother's case and how unjust, you know, it really is, and that people really would be concerned here about Mumia Jamal in Philadelphia, and that these brothers are very serious because they give a lot of advice also and insight to other inmates whose situation could change. And when I met Eddie that first time, I met Brother Michael Austin, who served all that time and was finally freed. And Brother Mandela, I forget Brother Mandela's name prior to that. I think Brother Lomax, yes, Walter Lomax. I mean, it's just incredible the number of us that, you know, they used to say the person in jail is the person that got caught. But a lot of us have been incarcerated for absolutely nothing. You understand that we have to make this the democracy, which is too much of a hypocrisy, really be working for the people. And that means that we have to become more aware.
Let me open the phones again at 410-319-8888. And Paolo in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello.
Welcome.
Paolo Gregory Harris. How are you doing, Mark?
Well, welcome, man.
It's good to see you and Dominique and all the others. I just want to lift my voice to join all the voices that I've heard so far today in saying it's time. Eddie does not deserve to spend another hour in prison. Mm. There's a lot that we can do. You know, we've got this parole hearing tomorrow. You know, the governor does have a significant power to change the situation. And I would urge us to not only write for this hearing tomorrow, but to continue to write over and over and over again until this brother is free, certainly to the governor and to every representative that we have to make sure this thing is over as soon as possible.
Thank you, Paolo. And I there's a actually you can go online to change.org and then hit /petitions, and then the governor of Maryland parole, Marsha Eddie Conway, And there's a petition there online that we'll have a link to on our website. People can sign the petition to free Eddie Conway. And I, before we go back to the phones, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at standardshow@gmail.com. I mean, this, you know, for some people, this is just history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's something that happened a long time ago. It's also something that, given everything that people face, it's not on people's agenda or not something they think about. And so people like Eddie and Leonard Peltier and others can be forgotten, mm-hmm. just imprisoned and just stay there and die and never come out again. I think that so it's hard. So I think bringing it up up to date mm-hmm. about why this makes a difference. I mean, what is it? Why it makes a difference, not just for his life, but why it makes a difference that Eddie Conway mm-hmm. should be paroled tomorrow when he has that hearing.
Why it makes a difference that he should be paroled is because, one, there are those of us that simply do not believe that he committed the crime
exactly.
that he was accused of. And the fact is that Jack Johnson, the other co-defendant, has been out of prison for over a year now. The third person died in prison in the 1980s, and so Jack has walked free. Why is Eddie still there? And the other thing to me is that any one of us could be Eddie Conway.
That's right. Anyone,
there are other people. During the time that I've worked in prisons, I've encountered other people that I firmly believe did not do what they were convicted of mm-hmm. and are also serving life sentences. I'm not saying everybody in prison is innocent, but there certainly are people in prison who did not do the things that they've been convicted of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the likelihood is that there have been people who've been executed mm-hmm. who did not commit the crimes
right.
that they were convicted of. And so it could be any one of us, and it will continue to happen. If it can happen when you have cases that are a little higher profile, certainly will happen to those folks who mm-hmm. have no money, who are unknown, who just have no resources. And so it's very important to take a look at it. The other issue is the fact that there has not really been parole in this state for about 20 years or so. We should be demanding some accountability. You cannot treat every case the same.
Right.
That's not fair. Okay, I realize that people will say, well, these folks did this, that, and the other. But the truth of the matter is you have to look at the individual. There is a man in the Jessup Correctional Institute, I believe, who is 70 years old. This man has been in prison since 1959. What is the point of still holding this individual? Does he pose a threat to the community at this stage? You know, so I think we can't just keep allowing these blanket policies to play out. They impact the, you know, community, our African-American communities disproportionately because we're disproportionately represented in the system from arrests on up to the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to begin to demand some accountability, and we have to question these policies. And we have to stand up for folks other than our own family, other mm-hmm. than our own friends, because you may need someone to stand up for you.
You know, and I was thinking back to a show that we did on May the 9th, 1996, about Eddie Conway.
Mm.
Paul Coates was on that show that day.
Mm.
He would have been here today, but he's out of town, who was a member of the Black Panther Party now and is a very successful businessman in our community. Marty Walker was here that day, and she was a defense attorney for Eddie Conway. But also on that show was Peter Ward, mm-hmm. who was one of the prosecutors in that case, who was on that show to say that Eddie Conway should, at the very least, be given a new trial, if not released.
That's 15 years ago.
That's 15 years ago. Mm. And he was a prosecutor on that case. I expect him to come on the show and say something very different when we argued whether or not that day, mm-hmm. 15 years ago, whether or not Eddie Conway should be free.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument was he should at least be given a new trial
mm-hmm.
and either be freed or really or imprisoned justly. Or free because he's been imprisoned unjustly. So I mean, so the fact that people who have been involved in this case, even from the other side,
mm-hmm.
Are saying you have to reopen it, and so people have different mindsets. And everybody doesn't have the mindset free Eddie, parole him, pardon him. But folks who have wanted to see him in jail, if they're also beginning to say, maybe this is a mistake.
Malcolm, I want to add this: we've had two city council resolutions passed. one this year and one 10 years ago.
Right.
One of the writers who wrote in opposition to the resolution that was passed 10 years ago, Gregory Kane. Gregory came to a rally that we had a few months ago celebrating Eddie's birthday. And Eddie had another article written about him by Gregory Kane. This time, Gregory Kane closes his letter or his editorial and says two things. Governor, to bring truth to justice, either release Eddie Conway or admit that an injustice has taken place and you're looking the wrong way. Gregory has basically said, as a result of his discussions, that he has seen a total difference, and without a doubt, Eddie should be released. I want to suggest to folks, because I did a show on another station earlier, very earlier this morning, and I got a lot of calls, which was good. And folks wanted to know because they began to understand what, in fact, had happened. They said, well, what can I do? I said, well, even at this 23rd hour, here's a phone number you can call, 410-585-3211. The reason I know it works because I called it today myself. This gets you directly to David Blumberg, who is the chair. You can also fax him. The fax
the
works.
Chair of the parole board.
Chair of the Maryland Parole Commission.
Commission, right.
You can fax him as well. The fax does work. 410-764-4355. And ironically enough, David does answer emails. A few months ago, I wrote him. David and I served on the election board together. So here's his email address. D is in David Blumberg, B-L-U-M-B-E-R-G, at D-P-S-C-S, D-P-S-C-S, dot state, dot M-D, dot U-S. All of those are working. We worked on it today to see if the emails would go through. They did. I emailed the letter that I sent. And I'm happy to say that the Maryland Parole Commission will confirm that they did receive it from you. And the letter that I sent a couple of weeks ago is clear that they gave it to Eddie because Eddie and I talked last week. I feel somewhat hurt. I didn't get my call today, Reverend Brown. So I'm hoping I get Eddie's call tomorrow. But family, you can still do something. You know, the parole hearing is tomorrow right now. That's scheduled. Call, email, or fax if you can.
We have to take a short break and come back. 410-319-8888. We'll give those numbers out again. As we talk about the parole hearing coming up for Marshal Eddie Conway, stay with us.
Make a difference.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We're here with Dominique Stevenson, director of the American Friends Service Committee, Maryland Peace for Justice Program, co-author of Martial Law, The Life and Times of a Baltimore Black Panther. Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. Charlie Duggar, teaching in the Baltimore City school system for over 40 years. Omari Fatio, who is graduate of the Friend of a Friend program, who now works in that program, and new Marshal Eddie Conway in prison while he was in prison. Doc Cheatham, president of the National National Action Network Baltimore Chapter. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Omari, I want to come back just to talk a bit about your own sense of Eddie Conway and the from the time you spent in prison, because I think one of the stories we don't hear, which you talked a bit about when you spoke earlier in the program, is the kind of work that Eddie Conway, despite his being in prison for a crime he didn't commit, a political prisoner for all these years, the kind of work he did in prison to help other people who are doing time and to be a man who stepped in to help end violence between other people.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, he's a great mentor. He actually
shows it through his walk, his everyday walk in prison. He's so focused on educating and getting the next generation to actually get involved and empower themselves. I recall me first, at one time, actually going through a module in the program. It was self-discovery. And it's so unique that we're speaking about how we can get involved and write to politicians and, you know, inform the community that they can, you know, petition the parole commission. Because at one time, I really didn't truly believe that we could make change. But through going through the program and having one-on-one conversations with Eddie through the mentoring program, I realized that I can empower myself. And I do have the capability to make changes in my life and within my community. So I find it unique that through all those circumstances that he constantly is involved in educating everyone else, educating, you know, the community from inside. So basically every program from my standpoint that he created in prison or helped create was based upon those fundamental principles, you know, organizing around individual and collective needs.
And I, you know, this some people might look at this effort as futile, but it's not futile. I mean, to free Eddie.
No.
I mean, I think the more pressure people put on, the more people have to respond. We only have a few minutes left, so whatever response we have, I mean, I do want to talk about that, about how to get this, how to put this pressure on to make the government know that Eddie should be a free man and why.
Well, I think it's like, you know, the Panther Party used to say power to the people. The power is within the people. And so, you know, the United States government wants to tell us about a political prisoner in China or somebody in Sri Lanka or somewhere. And we have many political prisoners right here that we don't know about and the injustices. You know, Dr. King said injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so this injustice that was heaped upon Eddie could very well have been you or me. And many times it is many people that we know today because we've been in such a government that has done its very best. We talk about J. Edgar Hoover. They said that whatever you do, we don't want strong black male leadership. You know, George Jackson, one of the heroes with the Panther Party, said black mothers must stop making cowards of their sons. So here we have a strong brother like Eddie Conway that the more our male youth particularly knew about him or gets to know about him, they shouldn't want to do anything but become better human beings. Lastly, in George Jackson's book, Soul Dad, brother, he talks about the Drosophila, that fruit fly that only lives for 4 hours. He said it was born at midnight. It will never see the light. But, you know, with brothers like Eddie, he's allowing all of us to see the light. You know, that fact, as the song, The Greatest says, no matter what you take from me, you can't take away my dignity. So all this time, they haven't taken away the brother's dignity or his integrity. So the least we can do is call, write a letter, email, fax, whatever is needed. But begin more and more to stand up.
So let me get to Heber Brown, Reverend Heber Brown. As somebody of a younger generation, especially, who is involved in this, how do you spread this out? How do you make people understand the importance of this from your pulpit or anywhere else?
Well, I think one of the things Sister Dominique shared with me, I think, well, I overheard from her that's really helpful for me is to humanize this. I mean, it's not just, you know, 60s movies or black and white clips on YouTube that Brother Conway is somebody's father. He's more than all that we've said as a powerful force in the community. He's a human being. Mm. And just as being a human being, he deserves our full effort. I also would say, too, I was just thinking about it here, is it really an economic priority for the state? Now, this is one of the least reasons, you know, less than all the others have been shared, but does the state of Maryland really want to spend money on continuing to incarcerate a brother who's already shown that he's a powerful force in our community? Why continue to pay to keep him incarcerated?
Well, I mean, the chances of his being pardoned are almost none. I mean, paroled maybe and pushing the state to deal with it because I don't think any city politician is going to parole somebody who has been convicted, rightly or wrongly, of killing a police officer. So the power has to come from somewhere else. Because I think the chances of Governor Martin O'Malley or Bob Ehrlich before him or anybody else paroling Eddie Conway is just not happening. So the pressure has to be put on somewhere else to get Eddie out.
Yeah, and I think we should never accept no. We should not accept no. No is not acceptable, whether we're talking about Eddie, whether we're talking about Leonard Peltier, whether we're talking about JoJo down the block. Is not acceptable anymore. We need to amp up the movement and stop allowing people to make determinations that impact our community negatively.
I would say King, I thought, put this in perspective in the end. It's not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Yes. We have a lot of friends, and we're asking our friends to take heart to what is happening here. We need you to do something, whether it's a call, a fax, an email.
That's right.
But we need you to do something at this point. The commission is tomorrow. We need you to do something.
So let me suggest this, and it's going to be on our website, that you can email D. Blumberg, D-B-L-U-M-B-E-R-G, at dpscs.state.md.us.
That's correct.
And we'll have that on our website, or call the parole board, David Blumberg's office, 410-585-3211. Or you can fax it over to 410-764-4355. All those will be on our website.
Well, add one additional thing is Eddie's number. His number is 1164-69.
That's his number. As a prison.
His inmate's number.
DOC
number.
Right.
DLC. So, and make your voice heard, and let's free Eddie Conway and make them know that it has to be done. And we'll put all this on our website, and let's not give it up. Thank you, folks, for all the fighting you do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to turn over to talk to John Perez, organizer of Occupy the Hood in Philadelphia, where another man is being kept in prison. But John Perez, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
So just quickly, since we only have a little bit of time left here in the program, we did want to give you talk a bit about Occupy the Hood. We've heard about Occupy Wall Street, Occupy all these cities, but there's another movement growing out of this movement. Talk a bit about what's happening in Philly and other places that you know.
Okay, yeah. Occupy the Hood in Philly is in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Philadelphia. So basically what we're trying to do is get the black community, the brown community, Latinos, Asian community to come out and support the overall movement of Occupy. And right now it seems to be going strong. There is another organization, Occupy Philadelphia Now, which is also an organization that was founded by people of color. And in solidarity, we're working with Occupy Philadelphia. So, but it's growing. And Angela Davis was here the other day, and there was about 1,000 people out there at City Hall supporting what she had to say. And so that was good.
So tell me, until we get up to Philly to see for ourselves, tell us how Occupy the Hood is manifesting itself. What's going on?
Well, a lot of the youth are coming out from the African American community, and initially it was spotty because when you looked on TV and you saw Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Philadelphia, you saw a lot of white males and stuff. But what we did was we went back into the community and let them know that, you know, the 99% is you. You know, all the problems that are affecting America affects the black community the most, you know. And so we're encouraging the youth, the students, people in the black community to come out and support us out here in Occupy Philadelphia.
So where is it taking place, Occupy the Hood in Philly?
Well, it's a broad-based thing. It's like people are going back to their neighborhoods. We're with at City Hall with Occupy Philly. We're actually at City Hall.
So are folks from Occupy the Hood also camping out and staying there as well?
Yes, that's correct. We formed a working group, the POC, People of Color.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a working group, and there are members from Occupy Philadelphia Now, members from Occupy the Hood, who are in this cohesive contingent of people of color who are working alongside Occupy Philadelphia.
So I wonder what this is. You know, when we were in New York and we covered Occupy Wall Street for up there and shot a video and did a radio piece and brought it back.
Yeah.
One of the things we saw was what people want to paint it as an all-white group, but it was a very interracial crowd, and we saw a lot of working people of color coming in at the lunch hour and after work to stand, to show solidarity. And as a matter of fact, and tomorrow we're hearing that there's going to be a march of veterans from every war, from World War II to Iraq, Afghanistan, marching in their uniforms to Occupy New York to show their support of Occupy Wall Street.
Okay.
So, but talk me a bit about how you think the Occupy the Hood movement has expanded the even the consciousness of the movement and where it's how it's changing.
Well, the thing is with Occupy the Hood here in Philly is that there's no leadership. There's no one group. It's like it's a conglomeration of people from different communities, which is considered the hood. And basically, it's we're all together. It's like a melting pot of different neighborhoods coming together, working together. It's not like one separate the veterans or the Teachers League or something like that, or one separate group. We're not a separate group. We're actually part and parcel of the whole Occupy Philadelphia.
And, I'm sorry.
So it's not like you can single out, okay, oh, that they're going to occupy the hood kind of thing. We're all mixed up in it.
And I was reading in the New York Times over the weekend about Occupy the Hood taking place in Brooklyn and Harlem, taking place all over.
Yeah.
This is something I think is important just in terms of how, you know, when you read in the major media, a lot of the major media, it's how to kind of minimalize and narrow the movement.
Right. Well, can I add that the one thing about Philadelphia, and I wanted to specifically when I formed this organization here, I kind of wanted it to be that way because, again, what people have to understand is we are working in solidarity with Occupy Philadelphia, who is working in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street. One of the problems we had when forming Occupy the Hood and also forming the working group, the people of color, was the fact that a lot of people thought that we were trying to be a separatist group.
Right.
So, you know, so we spent days hammering that out. Who's black? Who's white? Who could be there? Who could do this? Who could do that? And so we carefully took a lot of time hammering that out so that people could understand that we are in solidarity with Occupy Philadelphia and we're part and parcel of the whole group. So there's no separate group. But one of the things that we want to emphasize, and we're fairly young. This is we're going into our third week, so we have over 250 people on the Facebook page. But one of the things that we're beginning to do is go and take the message back to the black community, the Latino communities, and what have you, and try to get more people involved so that we can become a more structured organization. You know.
Now, I'm curious. I don't usually do this, but since the brothers and sister who stayed with us during the last hour to talk about this first part, I would talk about Eddie Conway and freeing Eddie Conway from prison, and all the people in this room are activists who've been fighting their entire lives for social justice and change.
Okay.
Do you have a quick question for John Perez that you'd like to throw in here while you're sitting around?
Well, Mr. Perez, this
Heber
is
Brown.
Quick question for you. I know that a number of the other Occupy the Hood groups across the country have experienced similar issues like the ones that you described. And there are some that are separate that have defined themselves a little bit more separate than what you described in terms of there are groups across the country who are saying, we are in solidarity, but we are not under the umbrella of the whole Occupy movement because they see the importance of a self-determined group whereby people of color, whether it be black, brown, or whatever, are speaking to their issues and walking as partners as opposed to walking as subordinates of a larger umbrella. I'm curious as to if that was a part of the discussion that you and your group had in Philly as well in terms of whether you could still be strong and walk alongside shoulder to shoulder as opposed to underneath the umbrella of Occupy Philly.
No, we're actually under the umbrella of Occupy Philly. We haven't reached that stage yet in terms of our struggle. And I will say this, that Philadelphia is sort of a conservative city. Me personally, I know it's a bigoted and racist city. But one of the things that we want to stress is that we want to work alongside with white people. We want to work alongside with the 99%. So we are consciously trying not to be a separate entity, even though the problems that affect the black community are acerbated, you know, 10, 20 times more than in, let's say, the middle class or, you know, upper class. So, but the overall, we want to walk side by side in solidarity, and we emphasize that with Occupy Philadelphia. Now, as the movement builds, then we will see what you know, where we go from there. For example, we went to city council here, just passed the stop and frisk. They extended the curfew here for the youth and everything, and we kind of, that was a battle we was fighting. We didn't get it, but it strengthened us. And like those issues where stop and frisk and stuff affect more predominantly African youth, you know, those are issues that we can specifically target, and that's what we're doing. Like we're coming back, and we're having meetings how we can more solidify this struggle and get the black community more involved. So something like that, you know, we're still building and working on.
And I was looking on the Facebook page of Occupy the Hood, and you can see in St. Louis, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Detroit, there are almost 10,000 people on this Facebook page from all over the country. And as I said, we're going to be talking to folks from Occupy the Hood in Brooklyn over this week, too, and trying to bring conversations together with people from all over the country. Charlie, we only have like a minute left, so a minute.
Say it's beautiful, though, Brother Perez, that you and the young people there are doing, and keep up the fine work, and to hear about Angela Davis. She has a good quotation for us. She says, if we don't realize that the time is now, the time will never come. So this is our time as a people to stand up, you know, wake up, you know, like Papa Wabe plays every Saturday, wake up, so the people are waking up, and they go, more and more of us are going to wake up, and this is a beautiful thing, so let's, you know, encourage our young people more and more. Beautiful.
Beautiful. Uhuru.
Sasa.
Papa Wabe, one of my favorite shows on the station.
That's right.
Give him another plug for Papa Wabe's show. So I, first of all, John Perez, thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you back on, and we're going to continue conversations bringing in Philly and Brooklyn and New York and Chicago and Phoenix and Oakland and Baltimore and D.C. into conversations together on this show, because Occupy, wherever that's being occupied, wherever it's being occupied, is growing across the nation. It's not diminishing with the cold.
That's right.
It's growing with the cold. So, John Perez, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back in touch with him as well, Occupy the Hood, Philadelphia. Folks, we're going to take a little break in a minute, but I have to tell you on the way there, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. Or you can go to steinershow.org, click on their banner there, and all the information will be there to all the programs at the University of Maryland Medical Systems. We'll be right back. Anthony McCarthy will be in the studio when I come back. We're going to talk a bit about redistricting, the role that race played or didn't play, and may still be playing in that redistricting, and then talk a little bit about the Republican Party and Mr. Kane. So stay with us. We'll be right back.